Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Anyway, it is time for Jonathan De Burke Butler, and he's with us once again to give us some news from other parts of the world. Jonathan, good afternoon.
Sean,
to you. Right, Taiwan, we're going to go to first. There's a ruling there, I assume, a court ruling on gay marriage.
Yes, Constitutional Court ruled on Wednesday that Taiwanese laws that prohibit same-sex couples from marrying violate the Constitution. They said specifically that sexual orientation was, to quote them, an immutable characteristic that was resistant to change. And as a result, they have now given the government direction to come up with legislation within the next 2 years. The new president, she's been there for about a year, has weighed in behind the court and basically told the government to hurry up, and that if they don't come up with legislation within 2 years, that this ruling will effectively take over, and that the status of a gay couple will be legally recognised by the state, whether they come up with legislation or not, which is kind of strange. I wonder why they gave that two-year time limit, and you know why they didn't just I don't know, it seems like an odd sort of caveat to me.
But that's
what they've decided.
But is it almost kind of like same-sex marriage is going to come into force and there's nothing we can do about it
effectively? That's
what political protection for themselves.
Yeah, exactly. But obviously they're giving it back to the legislature and saying, look, you're going to, obviously there's things that maybe we're not thinking about, up to you to come up with legislation and the nuances of it. And but if you don't, it within 2 years, in other words, if there's any delay, it's going ahead anyway.
Right. To amend the Taiwanese constitution, does it require a plebiscite of the people, or can...
That I don't know now.
Because if they're saying it's unconstitutional to ban same-sex marriage,
indeed,
then you'd have to change the constitution.
I would imagine so. Yeah, I would imagine so. I didn't think about that now, to be honest with you. So I'd have to look at that again. But anyway, that's the ruling they've given.
Right. Are there actual same-sex marriages in Taiwan as things stand now?
There was a marriage, no, right, so it's illegal, but there was a marriage that was given to, or wasn't stopped, at least, about 2 years ago, to a trans couple.
Right,
and the loophole was that the couple, when they were given the license, were a man and a woman, apparently. So they said, look, we'll just leave it alone, because when they got the license,
they were kind of legally a man and a woman.
Exactly. Yes. So that's what we'll do. And there seems to be a lot of goodwill towards it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So people are behind it.
Right. Okay. Australia we're going to now, and a story involving the Aboriginal community.
Yeah, a convention, effectively a 3-day convention that happened, I believe, near Ayers Rock, involving about 250 delegates from the Aboriginal community, and they came up with what they called a statement from the heart. It's now been called the Uluru Statement, basically, in the Australian media, and it's a statement of what they want. It had been thought for a very long time that recognition within the Australian constitution would be sufficient for them, but it appears that they want a little bit more, which would seem fair enough. I should tell you that as it stands, they're not recognised in the constitution, and they're the only Aboriginal peoples in the Commonwealth, apparently, that don't have that status.
Okay.
So Canadian Indians have a status, and so on. So they're looking, firstly, they're looking for recognition. They're looking for a sort of a truth and reconciliation commission as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the biggest thing here, and the biggest thing that's causing debate, is that they're looking for some sort of permanent parliamentary representation. Now, exactly what that is causing a little bit of debate. Most people who are advocates of it are saying it's not going to be a third chamber. You know, that's just exclusively for them. Some people are saying that it might be a section of the parliament that's reserved for them, but most people seem to think that it's some sort of an advisory board, that basically if there's any sort of legislation going through the parliament, they'll be consulted on these pieces of legislation to make sure that they're okay for them, if you know what I mean.
Okay, well, if it's legislation that affects them.
Yeah, indeed, but you see, the thing is, and this is what I know we're short of time, but this is sometimes what happens, is that the white fellas, okay, for want of a better way of putting it, they go, oh, we'll make legislation that's going to help the Aborigines. And then they come up with this legislation, the Aborigines haven't been consulted, and they find that it contravenes their traditional law.
Yeah.
And they're kind of there, thanks a lot, guys, you're after making it mess of our society, effectively, in whatever capacity it is. So that's what's happening anyway. There's a report going to be brought to them at the to the Prime Minister and the opposition leader at the end of June, and they might be looking into a referendum. If they need one to change the recognition side of the constitution by next year.
Right. What's interesting about voting in Australia, is it true that it's mandatory?
It's mandatory. Yeah, it's the same. Brazil has the same, actually, as far as I know. They fine you if you don't vote, which I very much believe in. I remember I've spoken to this with people a lot. I think it's a great idea.
And within the Australian population in general, the idea of at least recognising First Nation peoples in their constitution, is it a popular idea?
I think it would be. I mean, if you test it against, there was a referendum 50 years ago which gave Aborigines the right to vote, and that passed by 90%.
So it would pass,
undoubtedly. But they want a little bit more than just sort of a nod.
Yes, a nod is just that, a nod. Mm-hmm. Right, we're not going to travel too far for the next story. That's New Zealand. Very interesting case, though. A man who infected another man with HIV has been sentenced.
Yes, this is a man by the name of Miki of Filitonga. He was found guilty in March of this year of grievous bodily harm, okay? And effectively what he had done was he found out in February of 2013 that he was HIV. In July of that year, he was told by a nurse of his legal obligations, i.e. that he should inform people if he was getting into a sexual relationship with them. He got into a relationship with this man shortly after that. The man who, I believe, brought the case, asked this guy, Filitonga, on several occasions if he had HIV, and he said no. And it was later discovered that when they broke up, this man went, got himself tested, and in December of that year, he had also contracted HIV. So the judge basically said that it was sort of willful negligence on his part.
Yes.
And that's the reason he sentenced him to two years and 10 months.
Right. Is there a specific law covering this, or, you know, things like willful negligence, is that what's covering it?
I suppose that's what it is. It's under grievous bodily harm, and so that's what he was prosecuted under. There was test case. It was actually interesting because there was a test case that they were holding up against this from the 1990s, and this guy, the defendant's lawyer, argued that the sentence should be shorter than the sentence that was given back at that time because the treatments have improved, and the judge seems to have agreed with him and reduced the sentence accordingly.
Yeah, because presumably so many years ago it was close enough to a death sentence.
Right,
Mexico we're going to go to next, and this is about you could see kind of equivalence in hip hop, perhaps. This is a band that's been fined for playing songs about on particular subjects.
Yeah, this is in a place called Chihuahua in northern Mexico, which is where the dog actually comes from. But it's a band called Los Tigres del Norte, and they're very famous in Mexico. Now, I was looking these guys up on YouTube to have a look at their live performances to see, you know, some small band. They're massive. Absolutely massive. Croke Park size stadiums they play.
Right.
And anyway, there's a law in this state in Chihuahua which basically stops bands from playing what are called narco corridos, which are songs about narcotics, as you can imagine. And this band is famous for doing that. They went to a festival last Sunday, or the Sunday before last, I think, and played a famous song of theirs at the festival, and they've been fined $27,000 as a result, which, judging by the size of their concerts, I don't think is that much for them, to be honest with you.
But do their songs glorify the drugs trade, or is it just about the drugs trade?
The mayor in this case, basically in Chihuahua, who brought in this law about 5 years ago, said that she won't have any songs glorifying narcotics. Now you can judge whether they do or they don't, but certainly she seems to think so.
Right. Okay. What was this? The song was called what?
Contraband and Betrayal. It's about a man smuggling bad weed across the border to the United States and goes on from there.
Right. Okay. I can think of dozens of songs on similar themes. Bulgaria, going to go to now, and a minister's had to resign because of a Nazi salute.
Yeah, this is a deputy minister, a man by the name of Pavel Tenev, and I should tell you that there's only been a new government formed within the last month, so this is not a good start. It's Boyko Borisov, who's been prime minister on a number of occasions before, and he's in a coalition. His party, the GERB, are relatively centre-right, but he's brought in these three parties who are a little bit further to the right of them on the political spectrum. And it's caused a bit of an embarrassment. This deputy prime minister was visiting a wax museum in Paris in 2008, and there's a photograph of him standing in front of a mannequin dressed in a German military uniform doing a Nazi salute.
Yeah.
He put it up on his Facebook page, and he didn't have the foresight to take it down when he was running for election. The media latched onto it, and as a result, he's had to resign.
Yes. So idiocy as well as anything else. But do we know if it was just a jokey thing or he is serious?
Well, he says that he has no affiliation to Nazi ideology at all.
Yeah.
But it's more that his leader he seems to have fallen on his sword for his leader, because his leader actually made it worse. When his leader was asked about these pictures, he said, "Oh, I probably did the same when I went to visit a concentration camp in Buchenwald a number of years ago.
Oh, classy.
I can't remember." And so that caused more of a storm for this political party. So this deputy prime minister, or this deputy minister, seems to have fallen on a sword. And in his statement of resignation, he basically said, "Well, you know, I don't agree with this ideology, but it's causing my party embarrassment, so I'm going to resign."
Right.
So he's sort of saying to his leader, "I think thanks very much."
Right, Egypt we're going to now, or Libya stroke Egypt stroke Libya. Egypt's carried out airstrikes on ISIL positions in Libya.
Yeah, that is what the initial story was, but I was actually looking at it today. So first thing, most people remember last week there was a terrible gun attack on a busload of Coptic Christians who were being brought to a monastery. Islamic State have claimed it, and they said that they killed the 29 people who were on the bus. Egypt have retaliated by launching airstrikes in Libya in areas where they say, or they originally said, Islamic State were training. Mm. But it turns out now, from inside Libya, that it's more likely that they're actually Al-Qaeda positions. And when they were asked about that, the Egyptian government responded by saying, "Oh, well, look, they're all the same. They're all trying to attack Egypt, and we just want to make sure that our people are safe." So it's an interesting move by them, and they've just bought a whole shipment of warplanes from France as well quite recently. So what they're getting ready for, or what they're doing in that particular part of the world, is hard to know.
But it's not clear why Libya, why not Syria? It's closer.
Well, indeed. But they say that they had information about training camps in this particular town. I think it's the town of Derna. And they went in and they wanted to get these people out.
Yeah. So then again, that probably helps the regime in Egypt that, you know, we need martial law,
absolutely,
we're under attack, etc.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Right, Burundi we're going to go to next. This is a story about couples. Are they forcing couples to get married?
They are bringing legislation in at the end of the year, which is, I suppose, coercing couples into getting married. Now, this is President Pierre Nkurunziza, who's one of these presidents for life, and he's very good at football, according to himself as well. But he says that he wants to moralise society. He says that there has been a population boom, and he says that too many girls are going, and schoolgirls are going off and getting pregnant, and that men are taking advantage of not having to get married and have multiple partners, and he wants to tidy things up, shall we say. So he thinks the best way of doing that is by forcing people to get married, or at least if they're not married, they'll face legal consequences. What those are exactly, we don't know yet, but that's the message that's coming from him.
Right, okay. Also sounds kind of quite tricky to frame into legislation how exactly any of that would work.
Mm.
We don't have time to do the Tanzania-Malawi story, but I'm sure that border dispute will continue next week as well.
Indeed.
It won't have gone away. What should we look forward to over the coming few days, John?
Yeah, a few things. Politically, I suppose, Lesotho has a National Assembly elections on the 3rd of June. As most people know, Sergeant Peppers is going to be 50 on June the 1st. And on the 3rd of June, it's Wonder Woman Day. So we'll be looking forward to celebrating that, no doubt.
No doubt. We will all be celebrating Wonder Woman Day, though I believe the film is not great.
Haven't heard anything.
No, I saw there was a review in The Guardian that described her as a weaponized smurf.
Oh dear.
Right. Jonathan DeBarker Butler there. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.